What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Sheryl Selman, and this is a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters. And as a naturopathic doctor, I have a wonderful opportunity to interview leading researchers, integrative medical practitioners, researchers, people who are on the edge, who have the kind of information that is really essential for you to get informed so you can make the best decisions possible regarding your health. So this is a show that allows for in-depth exploration and personal conversations into the subjects that women must know. I want to remind everyone, by the way, that if you have not yet had a chance to go up to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, I certainly invite you to do so. If you get the moment to opt in, you will get several of my special reports that get sent to you. You keep on the edge there by getting informed with all the latest information that I make available. And on my website in the article section, there are many, many, many free articles, recordings of teleseminars, other interviews I have done that really is designed to empower you with the truthful information we're all looking for. So everything is free. Go up there. Take advantage of it. It's several decades of my work, and it's freely available to you because there's nothing more important than cutting through all the misinformation, the distortions, the lies. I find all the information that we hear in the media is really not the whole story, if it's any part of the story at all. So we need to find places that really provide us with the kind of knowledge that can help us negotiate through our own personal health challenges. And that's what I'm all about. That's what Women Must Know is all about. That's what this radio show is all about. And by the way, I do have another show on this network every Sunday at 4 p.m. It's a call-in show called The Women's Healing Circle, and it's another show that allows me to bring prominent people to you and who share fantastic information. You know, I kind of feel a little spoiled. This is like a personal mentoring opportunity for me because the quality of my guests and the knowledge that they bring to this is certainly educating and continues to empower me, and it's great that I can share it all with you as well. So that's the key. Getting empowered with truthful information is what we are all looking for, and this is one of those places, especially when it comes to the many, many challenges and needs for women's health. So today we're going to be talking about the healthiest foods on earth. We're going to help to dispel some of the myths and misinformation and lead you down the right path so you can not only make truly healthy food choices, but also hopefully introduce you to some new foods that have profound impact on our health. And so to help us explore this world that's found all over the earth, is my guest today, Dr. Johnny Bowden. He is a nationally known expert on weight loss and nutrition and is the author of the best-selling Living the Low-Carb Life, Choosing the Diet That's Right for You from Atkins to Zone. And he is also the host of a popular radio call-in show, and that's heard nationwide. And he frequently appears on television as a health expert and as a popular speaker at media events and seminars. And he's recently been on this show, and he was such a delight that I thought it would be great to have him back so he can share more of his great wisdom. So, hello, Johnny.
How are you, Cheryl? Nice to talk to you again.
It's a pleasure to have you back with us. Thanks for making the time. And I, you know, we talked about the low carb life, which was a fantastic discussion we had. People can, by the way, listen to the archives. And I forgot to mention, if you go to my website, What Women Must Know, on that homepage, it clicks you right over to all of those archive shows. So it's a really easy one-stop shop to get this information. So, you know, I thought it would be great to have a further conversation. This book you have, by the way, it's a beautiful book,
Thank you.
A piece of art. Congratulations on that. And it comes along, the book I'm talking about is The 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth, and the little subtitle is The Surprising Unbiased Truth About What We Should Eat and Why, and his companion book, which is The Most Effective Ways to Live Longer Cookbook, which is also a beautiful book, and filled with some great, not only recipes, but it really is giving you the healing benefits from the different foods that you highlight in the book. So it's a great book. I see some great recipes I want to try in there. So let's talk about some of the healthiest foods on Earth. Can we, first of all, dispel some myths about what we think is a healthy food but really isn't, so then we can kind of get that out of the way and then actually go for the truly healthiest foods on Earth?
Well, oh God, there's so many. Where to start? I mean, I'm probably picking the low-hanging fruit here, but certainly things like a lot of cereals, a lot of breads, and I'm not just talking about the ones that we all know are bad for us, like white bread, but a lot of the ones that pose as healthy foods. You know, whole wheat bread. It's really just basically white bread with a little bit of brown coloring in it. It doesn't have any more fiber or nutrients than any other processed bread. And in fact, many of the cereals are exactly the same way. They're just sugar-coated, empty kind of calories. And we've been taught that they're wonderful for us, and they're made from whole grains. And very often that's just not the case. They're just things that drive our blood sugar through the roof and cause us to secrete a lot of insulin, which is a fat storage hormone, and basically contribute to the overdosing on sugar that we're seeing in America. And the fact that these things are not exactly sugar doesn't matter, because the body treats them exactly that way. And that's an awful lot of foods that are masquerading as health foods. Now, more specifically, I think we've oversold soy as a health food. The form that we eat it in here in the United States is very different than the type that got all the press in the Asian diet. You know, they eat, first of all, far smaller amounts of it. Second of all, it's almost always fermented, naturally fermented, which means it has all kinds of enzymes and probiotics and wonderful things like that. What we are eating here is, you know, the refuse of all that stuff. You know, soy oil, soy chips, soy ice cream, soy milk, soy substitutes. I mean, that stuff's just crap. There's nothing healthy about it, and there's nothing life-extending about it, and yet we've kind of been sold this myth that if it's soy, it's good. You want me to go on? Canola oil? Should we take that one on?
Yes, I mean, let's just do canola oil, you know? Please. Yes.
I think canola oil is a cheap, crappy oil. You know, it's basically, Canada had this oil, this rapeseed oil, and didn't know what to do with it, and you couldn't sell it under the name of rapeseed, so they changed it to Canada oil, canola. And it's basically, the manufacturing, this has been detailed all over, particularly by the great lipid biochemist Mary Enig, PhD, who has written extensively on this, and it's all over the internet. You can read her essays analyzing this stuff, and a tremendous amount of references behind it. But basically, to make an edible canola oil, you have got to degum it, process it at ridiculously high heats, deodorize it, and do all kinds of chemical processes to it that really don't make it, in my opinion, a particularly healthy oil. It's got a small amount of omega-3s, it's a lot of omega-6s, and I think it's kind of just a triumph of marketing over science. I would never use canola oil.
And you know, I want to say it kind of irks me, because I see so many healthy recipes and recommendations that include canola oil.
Yeah. Well, and it also includes, and I'll give you another example of that, agave nectar.
Agave nectar
is high fructose corn syrup, folks. Listen, everybody's freaking out over high fructose corn syrup. Let me just back up a little bit on that. All sugar, plain old sugar, Domino sugar, right off the table. Go to the diner, you got the white sugar. It's 50% sucrose, 50% glucose, 50% fructose. That's what sugar is. 50% fructose, 50% glucose. Now, the damaging part of sugar is the fructose. That has been found in the last, certainly in the last decade, the research is very clear that it's fructose that's really doing the damage. Not that we should be, you know, mainlining glucose, but fructose is the part of sugar that's the problem. So, now high fructose corn syrup's got 55% versus 45%. And that allows the corn refiners people to scream, oh, there's no difference in it. And they're kind of right. There's not very much difference between sugar, 50-50, and high fructose corn syrup, which is 55-45. You know, you could argue that we consume so much of it that, you know, that extra 5% would make a difference. And there's a lot of arguments about why high fructose corn syrup has become so ubiquitous and so common that they're now adding sugar to things that never had sugar before, so we're actually consuming even more fructose because of the availability and cheapness of high fructose corn syrup. But basically, 55-45, not much of a difference between regular sugar. Agave nectar is 90% fructose, for God's sake. Where did this get the reputation as a health food? I just don't understand it. And yet, you know, we made the mistake ourselves. In one of our cookbooks, we used it. And again, I'm not saying you can never use a little bit of this stuff. You know, we write cookbooks a lot. We try to make them as healthy as possible. The fact is people want to eat desserts and they want things sweetened. So you do some damage control, you use a little bit of it. But what I've noticed with agave nectar is that people think it's a free pass. They think it's a perfectly healthy sugar and they can use as much as they want and it doesn't have any of the bad effects and it's really terrible for you.
You know, can I just stay on this point, because I just actually came back from Mexico and visited agave fields. Of course, the agave that was being harvested is for tequila, not for the agave syrup. But that's an interesting point it brings us to, because there's so much of a demand for this agave syrup that I know a lot of it is adulterated. But what I hear you saying, even the pure unadulterated agave, organic agave syrup is raises your blood sugar. So, I mean, because
here's where it gets very tricky, Cheryl, and this is precisely, it's probably at the heart of the problem. Fructose used to be considered a wonderful sweetener for diabetics. In the olden days, I mean, I remember this when, you know, they used to have a diabetic section at the A&P, you know, and they would have, you know, this liquid fructose, and it was always considered, still is in some circles, unbelievably, still considered a healthy sweetener for diabetics because it doesn't raise blood sugar. Now, this is a very important point. The selling point of agave nectar, everyone says, doesn't raise blood sugar. Well, fructose never really raised blood sugar. That's not the problem. It causes untoward damage in the body through other means. The fact that it doesn't raise blood sugar, I'm fond of saying neither does gasoline, but that doesn't mean I want to drink it. You know, it actually doesn't raise blood sugar, but it does, in laboratory experiments, it does cause insulin resistance through other pathways. It causes a great deal of postprandial hypertriglyceridemia. It raises triglycerides after eating more than any other sugar, and it turns to fat, and it causes problems in the liver, and it's just a very, very bad thing to be ingesting.
Wow. So something that has such deleterious
blood sugar.
I was just going to say, so what I hear you saying, because even I really didn't get the skinny on agave, but even though it doesn't raise blood sugar, it has deleterious effects on our health, like you're saying, raising triglycerides levels. So this also is a triumph of marketing and hype over fat.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And then you just put it in those nice little brown granola-y looking wrapping and make it look all healthy, and before you know it, you know, you've got another granola on your hands, which is basically cereal candy. So, we've been told a lot of myths about food, and it works the other side as well. As I talk about in the 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth, a lot of foods have been demonized that are particularly unfairly, one of which is coconut oil, another of which is meat when it comes from grass-fed sources. So a lot of these foods, butter, ghee, you know, a lot of these foods that we've been taught are so bad for us are actually not at all bad for us.
Well, that's probably a good segue into looking at those foods, and we can explore, because I think it's really helpful to dispel these myths so we don't throw out the really healing foods and substitute them with really you know, unhealing, unhealthy foods. So those are some great topics to talk about. Let's start with coconut, because I love coconut. I use coconut oil. I use coconut milk. You know, I use coconut milk instead of any other milk substitute in, you know, and teas mm-hmm. and poppies. And, so let's talk about that so we can really get people excited about the many, many benefits of the hubba coconut, which is, by the way, now found as flour. I recommend coconut flour to be baking with. That's such a great mm-hmm. flour. And mm-hmm. I know there's I'd like to hear your thoughts on the coconut. Isn't there coconut sugar out there now?
Oh, that I didn't know about. But.
You know, like I think they call it a coconut sugar or something. But anyway, yeah, so inspire us about the coconut.
Well, coconut oil, and I give a shameless plug to my friends at Barlean's who, you know, I certainly am not a part owner of that, but they make the best one as far as I'm concerned. The Barlean's extra virgin, they call it extra virgin coconut oil. And this is the thing about coconut oil. It contains, you know, the bad wrap has to do with the fact that it's got saturated fat. Now, you know, I am a saturated fat weaver, and I've written extensively about that. I think that we fear saturated fat for a variety of reasons, none of them really valid, and that's a whole other discussion that has to do with cholesterol and heart disease, but I feel that we have nothing really to fear from saturated fat from whole food sources like coconut, grass-fed meat, avocado, you know, and so forth. Now, the thing about coconut oil is that the particular type of fat in there, and it is a saturated fat, but it's a particular type of saturated fat called MCT, medium chain triglycerides. Now, this particular type of fat is actually used by the body preferentially as energy rather than as storage. This is one of the reasons why bodybuilders used to supplement with MCTs before a contest. Why? Because it gave them a needed source of calories, but it didn't tend to turn to fat. So the fat in coconut oil actually is almost treated by the body as a carbohydrate. It's almost treated as an energy source rather than as a storage fat. Second thing that's good about coconut oil is that the particular fatty acids that are contained within it, lauric acid, caprylic acid, these are very antimicrobial. They help to fight candida and various microbes that we really don't want in our body. So they're very stimulating to the immune system, and both lauric acid and caprylic acid are very, you know, good for us in that regard. So coconut oil is a good, you know, it's a good fat. It stands up well to heat. It's great for, you know, for stir frying and for making scrambled eggs. Sometimes I mix it with butter and make a little mix because it has a very strong flavor. So, you know, I'm a big fan of coconut oil.
Yes, you know, I think it really needs to be highlighted because it has this medium chain triglycerides, which is known to be thermogenic. I'm sure you recommend it to help with weight loss, since that's one of your specialties, right?
It's not so much that it by itself will help with weight loss, but it certainly can be part of a, you know, the thing about fat in general is that fat has virtually no impact on insulin. It doesn't raise insulin at all, and insulin is the fat storage hormone. So, of course, this brings us to why we keep recommending these high-carbohydrate, low-fat diets mm-hmm. to diabetics who have to control their blood sugar. It's just complete insanity.
Right.
They should be eating more fat, not less, because fat has almost no impact on their blood sugar or insulin. So if you want to control blood sugar and insulin, have a higher fat, higher protein, lower carbohydrate diet.
And what about getting the oil that is just a medium chain triglyceride, which I guess, I'm not sure what, maybe you can explain the difference, because I have an oil that I bought that's an MCT oil.
Yeah, you can actually buy MCT oil. That's what the bodybuilders used to use as a supplement. It's called MCT oil, and it just looks like fish oil or any other oil, you know, and it's basically oil, and it's MCT, medium chain triglycerides. Now, medium chain triglycerides are a component of coconut oil, but they're not the whole thing. There's still the coconut flavor, and, you know, there's a lot of things in coconut oil besides just the MCTs, such as the flavor and the coconut. But you can get an extracted MCT oil and take it as a supplement, although it's not done very often, and it used to be in fashion with bodybuilding, as I said. Better to get it just from the coconut oil because it's contained in there.
But is there any untoward effects from taking the MCT oil?
Apparently,
it's a little more processed.
I'm not an expert on using MCT as a supplement because it's
right.
not really done very much. It was done in the 80s and 90s for bodybuilding, and it may still be. But I there are no untoward effects to using coconut oil or, you know, something that contains MCTs in your diet as part of a regular healthy diet. There's absolutely none that I know of.
And I think we need to let people know, too, that the coconut oil is antifungal and antiviral. I mean, by eating this, you're actually building your resistance to or helping to resolve some of these conditions. And I have to say, it's so nourishing for the skin.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
You know, I mean, I remember those years I lived in India. And one of the smells I'll always remember is coconut oil, because the Indian women, Indian men, they put it in their hair. It's like everywhere in India, you really can smell that coconut smell. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So supposedly, by the way, it helps to keep their hair color dark. I don't know if there's any.
I don't know anything. I actually don't know that. Sorry.
But they use it as their hair oil. It's interesting.
Okay,
and then, so from coconut oil, let's go over and look at the other foods that's been victimized here, and that's the grass-fed beef. And the real nutritional components of grass-fed beef, which make it a healing food. Let's talk about that.
Of grass-fed meat?
Yeah, grass-fed beef.
Grass-fed meat has everything that meat has, and which are, you know, there are tons of good stuff in meat. There's vitamin B12. There's, a fantastic source of protein. It's the most absorbable form of iron. Question is why grass-fed and not regular meat? What grass-fed doesn't have is the crap that's in regular factory-farmed meat that we don't want in our body. And in my opinion, that's the only reason not to eat meat, is the stuff that they put in it when they factory-farm these animals. And that stuff consists of steroids, antibiotics, bovine growth hormone. There's just a million reasons not to eat factory-farmed meat. But those reasons do not exist with grass-fed. Grass-fed meat has a higher content of omega-3s. So it's actually a good source of omega-3, because when cows are raised on pasture, which is their natural diet, they're munching on grass and worms and insects, and they get plenty of omega-3s in their diet, and it winds up in their meat. So they have less of the omega-6, the inflammatory omega-6s, because that comes from a highly grain-based diet, which is not what cows should be eating. So there's a better balance between omega-3s and 6s. There's also a particular fat only found in the meat and byproducts of grass-fed or pasture-raised animals, and that's called CLA, conjugated linolenic acid, and that has some anti-obesity action, but even more important, it has some anti-cancer activity. So lots of good things in grass-fed beef. No reason whatsoever to avoid meat if you're eating grass-fed.
And that's a bit of a challenge for many people, because you can't buy that in your supermarket.
Well, you can in some.
Can you?
Yeah, oh, sure. Well, I mean, in any large city that has a kind of healthy, you know, a Whole Foods or a Trader Joe's or a Henry's Market, you can almost always find grass-fed meat.
But not in your mainstream supermarket.
It's not going to be in your mainstream markets, but it is very widely available online. We have a link to a place called U.S. Wellness Meats that ships across the country. They make fantastic products, and everything is grass-fed, and they're very, very responsible farmers. They ship everywhere. It's right on my website under Healthy Foods, and there are others like that, and there are, you know, in California, there's Novi Ranches. There's all kinds of places. So people can find grass-fed, and believe me, it's worth the wait. It's worth the effort.
And that's where your local farmer's market really comes in handy, because you can often find some of
Very
the
often.
Local people. Yeah,
you certainly can. There's an incredible one out here in Hollywood where they, you know, the farmers come in with their pasture-raised, you know, grass-fed meat, and it's just it's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, it's and those things are becoming the markets are just sprouting up everywhere, which is a great way to support your local farmer and grower. Yes, you know, when I started investigating grass-fed beef, it was amazing to learn how nutritious and how that type of meat has nutrients in it that cannot be found in the cattle that are raised in feedlots.
Sure.
You know, it's a very different animal.
Yeah, it really is. It is literally a different, and it's a happy animal.
It's a happy
so
animal.
So for those of us who care about those kind of things, these are animals that are raised in very good conditions. And I always say in my lectures, you know, if you're going to eat meat, eat it from happy cows.
Okay. You know, here's one of the big myths, and that's the egg myth. So we're gonna blow that myth.
I've been working on that one for 20 years, and unfortunately, I still see people ordering egg white omelets. So I don't know that that one's gonna disappear anytime soon. But yes, folks, egg white omelets are idiotic. There is no reason whatsoever on the planet to eat them. The yolk contains incredible rich array of nutrients, including lutein and zeaxanthin, which are fantastic for the eyes. Choline, which is fantastic for the brain. Nature designed this food this way. Our Paleolithic ancestors didn't eat egg whites and they didn't eat low-fat caribou. They ate the whole food. It really is a wonderful package. There's no reason to avoid it. The cholesterol in the egg does not really appreciably raise the cholesterol in your blood. I happen to think that doesn't even matter, but that's another issue. So dietary cholesterol has almost no impact, virtually no impact on blood cholesterol. So there's really no reason to avoid the egg yolks.
Right, and you know, I think some of the other distinctions, what about eating eggs that are raw or just, you know, like very softly boiled as opposed to a...
This is the old Rocky thing. I mean, you know, the old bodybuilders, I still do it. I mean, you throw raw eggs into the smoothies all the time. I mean, I do that all the time. I throw a raw egg into the smoothie. People, you know, freak out a little bit about salmonella, but the fact is that salmonella, first of all, hits maybe 1 in 70,000 eggs to start with, and number two, when you're talking about eggs that come from free-range chickens that are raised in healthy conditions, that figure drops to just about zero. So it really almost doesn't even happen with free-range. You know, humanely raised chickens that are out there, you know, they're just healthier. And so they have even less of a chance of salmonella. And may I also point out, 1 in 70,000, not much risk, and we're not talking a life-threatening illness. We're talking a stomach ache for a day. So I don't really freak out about, you know, the remote chance of catching salmonella from an egg.
I mean, the eggs are great. I mean, they are a great source of protein. They're a great source of healthy fats and lots of other, you know, forms of nutrition. It's a kind of a complete package. It really provides us with so many things. And I think that distinction needs to be adhered to. You don't really want to buy eggs, if at all possible, that are your battery hen form of egg. You just don't get the nutrition because those chickens are so diseased and stressed and, you know, you often see it in the color of the yolks are really pale. But when you get a really good, free-range egg, my God, that yolk is so yellow. It's so yellow. It's almost orange. And they're everywhere these days. You can even get them in most supermarkets. And it's worth paying a little bit more because you do get a higher source of nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I absolutely do.
And I do raw eggs too in my shakes or cook them very quickly so they don't really get hard and rubbery, you know, so they seem to be more absorbable and you have access to some of those proteins, I think, a little bit better, don't you, if they're not too cooked?
Sure.
Yeah. So another one of my favorite things to get people to open their minds to again is the butter story.
Well, it's the same story. Again, you have, this is a product that comes from animals, so it's only as good as its source, just like vegetables are only as good as the soil that they're grown in. The animal products you eat are only as good as the animals were healthy. So again, you really want butter that comes from, you know, pasture-raised cows, and when you do get that, you get the same thing. CLA, the conjugated linoleic acid, a better ratio of omega-3s, and butter's a perfectly wonderful food. I use it all the time.
Yeah. So, I love butter, and what's even better than butter is ghee, which some people may never have heard of before, but you can explain a bit more about what ghee is.
About ghee? Ghee is clarified butter. It's used in India all the time. They just skim the fat off of it and use the clear butter as a result. And it's considered, you know, in Ayurvedic medicine, it just has a practically a holy place of importance in for all kinds of reasons. And I don't pretend to be an expert in Ayurvedic medicine, but certainly that is a staple in the healing foods arsenal. And ghee is a wonderful food.
Yeah, you know, ghee is pretty amazing because it is considered one of the best healing foods out of that Ayurvedic tradition. And because you're taking any milk solid out of it, it's 100% fat. It, you know, people go, is butter or ghee dairy? Well, no, not really. It doesn't have any milk solids in it. It's just a really healthy fat that we really need, especially, you know, one of the things I learned about the butter and ghee thing is it really is necessary for people who are dealing with heavy metal toxicity because it actually helps in the body's ability to take out those heavy metals, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're so phobic about any oils of any sort, and that's such a disaster for our health. That's really been a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, when we look at the health of Americans and we look at all the advice that Americans have been given as far as what we've been told is healthy and unhealthy, we can see that either people are disregarding it or mm-hmm. the information itself is absolutely wrong because our health is not improving as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we need to pay attention. We're not given the kind of truth we need, which is why what we're doing is so important today. You know, one of the things that I want to talk about is cheese, because I'm a bit of a lactose intolerant person.
Mm-hmm.
And I want your take on what's the really healthiest cheese. Do you think a lactose intolerant person can do cheese? And if so, what it is? And for those mm-hmm. that can, what would be the best, the healthiest type of cheese available?
Okay, I'm not 100% sure I can answer that, but we'll try.
Oh, you know what? Oh my gosh, we're up for a break. So hang in there. Everyone, we are listening to Dr. Johnny Bowden. We're talking about the 150 healthiest foods on earth. Stay tuned because we have more to share when we get back.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off! I said not to play it!
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny. That's not funny!
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Allison Rose Levy. I've been a health journalist for 25 years. I'm currently blogging on the Huffington Post. After more than two decades of studying, talking about, exchanging, and reporting on integrative well-being and collective psychology, I think we're ready to step up to the next level. On Connect the Dots, we're going to reach beyond the merely individual look at health to look at the community, societal, and global level of what we need to address to better our health. Please join me Saturdays at noon Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network, and I look forward to dialoguing with you.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
Driving you crazy? Do you have a cheating boyfriend or girlfriend? An ex you can't let go of? An obnoxious boss? Adult kids who won't listen? I'm Hollis Polk, and I fix relationship problems. Your Life, Your Relationship with Hollis Polk offers you practical solutions for all sorts of people problems. listen, and call in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, or download the podcast at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Listening to PRN Progressive Radio Network.
Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Silman. We are back at What Women Must Know, and we are talking about the 150 healthiest foods on earth with Dr. Johnny Bowden. Would you like to give your website? So
I'd love to. JohnnyBowden.com. J-O-N-N-Y. No H in Johnny. J-O-N-N-Y-B-O-W-D-E-N. And you can also follow me on Twitter. Twitter.com/JohnnyBowden.
Okay, great. So what else do you want us to know about some of these healthy foods? We've talked about some of the foods that have had a lot of a bad rap given to them. But what else have you discovered and written about that you think we should know about and should incorporate into our diet?
Well, you know, there's so many really wonderful foods that we don't really think about a lot all year round. One of them is, for example, pumpkin. We think of pumpkin during the holidays. You know, it's always makes a showing during, you know, Halloween and then Thanksgiving. But pumpkin's a great vegetable. And I don't quite understand why people don't eat that more often. It's high in fiber. It's ridiculously low in calories. It's got tons of beta carotene. It's a really, really great vegetable. That would be a great thing to eat during the year. There are also some kind of unsung heroes of the vegetable kingdom that are just so loaded with nutrients you just can't even believe the list. One of them, for example, is Swiss chard. People don't eat a lot of Swiss chard, but my God, that is a nutritional powerhouse. There are some surprising facts about food that people don't know. For example, or that I found that most people don't know, would you be surprised to find that avocado is a very good source of fiber?
No.
Very surprising, isn't it? You don't think of that as fiber.
No.
Got way more fiber than bread and cereal, which is one of the reasons I just find it so amusing that these dietitians keep telling us about whole grains and fiber when most of these cereals and breads are fiber lightweights compared to something like avocado, which has 8 grams per serving, and beans, which have 11 to 17 servings, and they got these crappy little breads with 1 gram per serving, and they're telling us we should be eating them. I just don't get it.
I mean, we don't really need our grains for our fiber because, I mean, vegetables are complex carbohydrates. They do have lots of fiber in them.
Sure, so does fruit. Yeah. And look, I'm not saying that we should never eat greens. I'm saying that we need to be selective about it. It's not for everybody. I don't think it should constitute 60% of our diet. You know, we didn't have agriculture on this planet until about 10,000 years ago, which in the 24-hour mankind clock is about, you know, 11:59 and 40 seconds. So, you know, this is not a food that we consumed, you know, grains for most of our time on the planet, and many people have not adapted to it. And you know, Cheryl, yourself, that the whole gluten sensitivity issue is really beginning to kind of reach a tipping point. People are beginning to be aware of how many ways our bodies can kind of say, I don't like that stuff. It's not always full-blown celiac disease, but it's a continuum, and many people get really annoying symptoms that they're not really sure where they come from, and very often it's tied to gluten and grains. So I think we could do with a little less grains in our diet.
Well, I have to say, and this isn't necessarily everyone's cup of tea, especially if you're on the go and you like to pick up a sandwich and stuff, but since I actually gave up just about all grains, certainly all gluten grains, but I don't do a lot of grains in any form, it has stabilized my weight. I've lost my pain in my joints, the inflammation, my autoimmune disease has disappeared, my moods have improved. I see so many of my own issues that have been healed because I actually gave up that gluten-free carb world. And, you know, it was a gradual process. I kind of wish I had come to it sooner. It probably would have saved me a lot of pain and suffering. But be that as it may, it's where I'm at right now, and it's something that has profoundly changed my life. And I don't crave them anymore, which people don't realize they are addictive to our brain chemistry. So it's been quite a revelation in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what else, Johnny? You've got such great things. I'm just going to let you run with it.
Well, you know, let's talk about salmon a little bit. One of the, you know, one of the great health foods of all time. There is, and I write an essay in the book on this about the difference between wild salmon and farmed salmon. You know, I think, let's back up a second. You know, one of the problems with the economics of food and marketing is that, you know, something gets a reputation as a healthy food, for example, salmon, and there becomes such a demand for it that they start producing it in quantities that really are not consistent with the quality that the original, that gave the food its reputation in the first place. When you raise salmon in pens, you know, which is the only way they can raise enough of them to, you know, fill the demand, you've got the equivalent to factory-farmed food, cows, except in the fish kingdom. These fish are fed grain. They're kept in tiny, close quarters. So, again, what do they have to do? They have to be fed antibiotics to keep them from getting sick because they're not meant to be in such close quarters. They're fed grain, which is not their natural diet. Their natural diet is krill, crustaceans from that they find in the water. They get their wild salmon gets its natural red color from a particular antioxidant found in its natural diet called astaxanthin, a fantastic antioxidant. It happens to be red, and that's how they get it. But farmed salmon get their red color from red coloring, so, you know, or from fake astaxanthin. So it really is, and farmed salmon, by the way, according to the Environmental Working Group, which is a nonprofit group that, you know, consumer advocacy group that looks at food and contamination and pesticides and has that wonderful Dirty Dozen list that they publish every couple of years. According to the Environmental Working Group, farmed salmon is the number one source of PCBs in the American diet. So, you know, farmed salmon is, it's certainly better than no salmon, but there's a real world of difference between wild salmon and farmed salmon. And I would argue that, you know, in the same way that you want to choose grass-fed meat whenever possible, you really want to get nice wild Alaskan salmon.
And I think that's such an important distinction because we see salmon a lot on the menu, but I never order salmon that doesn't state it's Alaskan salmon because you know
wild
you're
Alaskan
getting
Pacific salmon. You really the farmed kind, the Atlantic kind, is just not. It's really not. It's better than nothing. It's still high in protein. There's still some omega 3s, but there's a lot of. It's definitely not in a class with the wild stuff.
You know, the canned salmon, I believe, when I looked at the labeling on canned salmon, even in, you know, your normal supermarkets, it says it's Alaskan, so that must be a great source of the real Alaskan pure healthy.
Well, yes, and I want another plug for a company that I'm very fond of, again, that I have no financial connection to. Vital Choice is three generations of Alaskan fishermen. They are incredibly environmentally aware, sustainability aware. They only catch with nets. They test their products, you know, 37 different ways for heavy metals, and they ship all over the country. I have a link to them also on my website under Healthy Foods. There's even, as a matter of fact, there's a Vital Choice, there are doctor packages, and Vital Choice is endorsed by Dr. Christiane Northrup, Andy Weil, myself, and Nick Perricone. And all of us have, you know, kind of our doctor's package, the Dr. Johnny intro package, my favorite products there, and, you know, Perricone's got one. And so it's really, it's a great company, and it's endorsed by just about all of us. And I'm proud to say there is a Dr. Johnny intro package. If you go to my website, you can get it. It's got, you know, my favorite salmons, the canned ones, which once you have those, you'll never go back to supermarket, and some, you know, some frozen and organic blueberries and raspberries, and they also, you know, have stuff like this. It's a really nice little package, under $100, definitely worth a try. They ship it to you in dry ice. Can't do better than that.
Yeah, it is a great company. I've had their food.
Great guys, you know, they really care about the environment. They care about what they're doing, and they're really passionate about it.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about what your favorite nuts are, because people always
ask them all.
Me,
really? I like them all. I'm a
peanuts,
big nutty.
Peanuts, too?
Well, peanuts are a legume. Well, they're not technically a nut, but, yeah, I like peanuts.
Okay. So do you have any kind of caveats about how to eat them or what kind to look for so they're not rancid or most absorbable? Do you ever like, do you soak your nuts? Do you like soaking nuts?
You know, I've had, I will be honest with you, I had this discussion with another naturopath recently. It's definitely a good thing to soak them, and I don't always do it. I'm lazy. I mean, you know, like everyone else, I'm not completely lazy, but sometimes I forget those things and take shortcuts. But if you've got the time and inclination to soak them overnight, they become a little bit more digestible, and you access a little bit more the enzymes and so forth. And that's probably a good idea. But it's, you know, it's not necessary. You can grab a handful of nuts and not have to worry too much.
Yeah, they are such a great little fast food to take with you and keep your blood sugar balanced and get those healthy oils and all that stuff.
Yep.
You know, when you started off talking about soy and how we've been sold a bill of goods about soy, but I've always wondered about edamame. Would considered? So
because the soy that is non-controversial, meaning even the anti-soy brigade, and I think that they sometimes are a little more strident than I would, you know, I'm comfortable with. I don't think, you know, if you talk to them, as many of your listeners probably know, there is a very vocal anti-soy brigade. I think they're a little bit strong. I don't think this is the worst. You know, we have to choose our eating battles pretty carefully, you know. And when people are eating 7 meals a day or 7 meals a week at McDonald's and Carl's Jr. And Taco Bell, you know, you want to go after the big stuff, the low-hanging fruit, before you start to, like, you know, nitpick on things like soy and canola oil. These are not the huge health risks in our diet. But that said, even the anti-soy folks have no problem with naturally fermented soy, such as tempeh and naturally made soy sauce and miso and things like that. And edamame is not really fermented, but it's also it's the bean. It's a good source of protein. It doesn't appear to have many of the negatives that soy does. I think edamame is just, you know, perfectly fine.
Okay, good. You know, we are going into spring. Spring is the Chinese medicine, the time of the liver. It's a good time to detoxify from heavier foods that we've eaten during the winter to help us generate the heat. What are some of the foods that you like that help for detoxification?
Well, let's back up and talk about what detoxification really is. I think it's a very misunderstood concept. There's tons of detox diets and tons of products you can buy for detoxification. I'm not sure you really need them, but we even have them on the website because there's such a demand for them. But I always tell people you can use those products, but you can do a quote-unquote, and I put it in quotes for a reason, detoxification in a lot of different ways. The body's always detoxifying. Always. That's what the liver does. That's its job. That's its job description. It looks at the body, anything that's in there that doesn't belong, whether it be medicine, whether it be exposure to pesticides, whether it be, you know, just junk in the body that you're exposed to either through breathing or whatever, the liver gets rid of it. It literally, there's two phases of detoxification, and they're nutrient dependent, and that's what the liver does. So you're always doing that. When we talk about a detox, I think what we really mean is we're sort of trying to help the process along a little bit. And to me, I look at it kind of like a crowded desk. You know, your liver, given what we're exposed to, just in breathing and secondhand smoke and the air and on the 405 freeway and, you know, God knows what else that comes into our body, medicines, medications, all of these things, we give our livers a pretty darn big job to do. So to me, it's almost like having an inbox that is just, you know, bursting with emails and papers, you know, on your desk. So one of the ways to kind of give it a rest is to say, I'm not taking any more new work right now. I want to clean out my desk before I take any new projects on. So when we talk about detox, I think what we really mean is let's give the liver a break. Let it do some cleaning up, and let's not give it some more stuff to do. So it's really about eating extremely cleanly, not giving the liver any extra burdens, and making sure it has all the nutrients it needs to perform the two phases of detoxification. That's really what a detox diet is. It's just a kind of a rest for the digestive system and for the liver so it can kind of catch up and do a little bit more effective job instead of kind of constantly trying to bail out the ocean. So you can do that with broths, with vegetables, with juices, You can do a water fast. I do not recommend that. I think it's incredibly hard on the body, and you can get all the benefits without water, without, you know, with some food or some juices so that you can provide some nutrients. So I don't think a water fast is a good way to do it. But they're all in the same spirit, which is let's give the liver a rest. Give it a break. And mother's little helper, you know, let's not give it any more work to do. And that's really the core idea behind detoxification.
Right. So I know that some of those greens are really good.
The greens are great, and again, the reason for that is the chlorophyll in many of the grasses actually does help the blood get rid of stuff that doesn't belong. It's kind of like a filter. They always, you know, in naturopathic medicine, as you well know, they often use a colloquial expression to explain this to the average person. They say it's a blood purifier. Well, it sort of is in a way. It does help the blood to get rid of stuff that doesn't belong in it, and chlorophyll does that very well. So that's that green stuff that's in a lot of the grasses, and when you get these green drinks, you know, you're kind of loading up with all the nutrients that are found in the green vegetables that they extract, like spinach and broccoli, and also in the grasses, like barley grass and wheat grass and all of these things. So green drinks, wonderful thing to do.
So, I mean, that's good any time of the year.
Any time, but definitely part of a detox, sure.
Do you like just doing a day, if you want to do a bit of a cleanse, just do a day of green drinks or making your own?
I think, you know, I use the Barlean's greens on almost a daily basis. I mean, it's a very convenient way to get a lot of nutrients into your system for very low calories. And I actually use greens sometimes almost as an appetite suppressant or as a general kind of blood sugar stabilizer because they have such a low glycemic impact, meaning they don't raise your blood sugar very much. They are kind of filling, and it's all of about 30 calories a serving. So I think green drinks are terrific.
Yeah, and, you know, that's just a good plug for people to incorporate more greens.
Absolutely.
You know, kale's become a little superstar vegetable.
It is. It's a star in the 150 healthiest foods on earth. One of the highest ORAC rankings, which is a rating of antioxidant power, kale is just a superstar. It's kind of the vegetable equivalent of blueberries.
And so it's just taking it any way you can. You get the benefit if you cook it as well as if you just kind of put it in your food processor and put it into your drinks.
What, you're talking about kale? Or?
Yeah, kale.
Yeah, well, I like it, you know, cooked and or even raw with, you know, I think I mentioned a recipe in one of the books that actually came from Whole Foods. They kind of mix it with some dried cranberries and pine nuts and a little bit of olive oil, and it's just fantastic.
I'm getting hungry here now.
Yeah,
and that's often overlooked by most people. But I mean, people really should incorporate their greens. And I have to say, I always tell people, you really want to have about 5 different vegetables per meal. If you steam it, it's easy to do a little of this, a little of that.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure you get your vegetables. And I guess one other classification of vegetables we really need to talk about before we come to the end of the show is the cruciferous vegetable family.
Oh, yes. Okay, let's talk about those. Now, why are the cruciferous vegetables, let's tell everybody what we're talking about, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, kale. These are the cruciferous vegetables. They're a member of a class of vegetables called the brassica family, which is, I call them vegetable royalty. Now, why is this? Let's go back a little bit in time. Researchers noticed that Polish women and Eastern European women in general had far lower rates of breast cancer than anyone else, and they also noticed that when these folks moved to America, their breast cancer rates went up to what is seen here in America. So it wasn't their genes that had changed. It's the same folks, you know, when they move here, they all of a sudden they're getting higher rates of breast cancer. When they live in Eastern Europe, they have lower rates. What's going on? So the research looked at their diets and tried to find, you know, what might be the dietary connection to that, and they found that these women ate a ton of cabbage. And further research isolated some components in the cabbage which tend to have very powerful anti-cancer activity. And those components are called indoles. And they're found in cabbage, and they're found in broccoli. And this is precisely the reason why cruciferous vegetables are considered to have such anti-cancer activity. And it's because of these indoles. And what do the indoles do? Very simple. They act as traffic cops for estrogen metabolism. Now, remember, men have estrogen too. Mm-hmm. And estrogen has three different metabolites, and one of them is potentially carcinogenic, and that's when you hear about hormone-dependent cancers, and one of them is very benign. And what the indoles do is they kind of act as a traffic cop, moving estrogen towards the more benign metabolites and moving it away from the more carcinogenic metabolites. And that's you know, the beauty of these cruciferous vegetables.
And that's why they should be a foundational food.
Absolutely.
In people's diets.
Absolutely.
You know, it's really understanding how important those cruciferous vegetables are.
Sure.
So, I mean, they're a wide variety. They're a big family, you know.
Yeah.
You know, broccoli, cauliflower,
yeah, absolutely.
Brussels
sprouts. But they all contain indoles, and cabbage and broccoli seem to be, you know, really outstanding for that. You can take indole 3-carbinol or its metabolite DIM as a supplement, and I often recommend that, but you can also get a lot of that from the actual vegetables itself. So I think that's a really, really smart thing to include in your diet.
I agree.
And while we're talking about unknown things for cancer prevention or for, you know, that have some anti-cancer activity, flaxseed contains something called lignans. Now, we talk about flaxseed a lot in terms of its omega-3. It has a plant-based source of omega-3 called alpha-linolenic acid, ALA. But more, I think even more important in flaxseed are these lignans, which have absolutely demonstrated anti-cancer activity against at least breast and prostate, and possibly a couple others as well. And if you search the PubMed, the National Institute of Medicine, database, which, you know, contains thousands of studies, you put in lignans and cancer, you'll see many, many different, you know, studies confirming the lowering of risk for cancer for high lignan intake. So, you know, this is another wonderful thing to know about flaxseed. Flaxseed itself, not just the oil, or high lignan flaxseed oil, which is flaxseed oil that's been engineered to have a high amount of these lignans.
And just real quick, what about things like chia seeds and hemp seeds? What are your thoughts on those?
That's another source of plant-based omega-3s. Now, understand that there are three omega-3s. One of them is found in plants, like flaxseed, and to some extent chia seeds and hemp seeds. And the other two are found in animal products like fish and grass-fed meat. There's quite a controversy because the body, you know, most, not all, but most of the research on omega-3s has actually been done on the two omega-3s that are found in fish, EPA and DHA. Less has been done on the one that's found in plants. So that doesn't mean the one that's found in plants isn't important and essential and vital and has anti-inflammatory properties. But, you know, when you talk about chia seeds and hemp seeds, we're talking about a plant-based omega-3, not the ones that are found in fish, which are, you know, really potent. And I think, you know, if we're going for plant-based, flaxseed is the go-to source of that. I mean, it's the one that has the most omega-3s, plant-based omega-3s. It's the one that's been around the longest. And, you know, if I was looking for plant-based omega-3, certainly chia seeds and hemp seeds are options, but so is flaxseed.
Okay, great. Now, we're just about out of time. How about giving your website once again?
Sure. And, JohnnyBowden.com, JohnnyBowden. I'm known now as the Rogue Nutritionist, and I think that maybe
That tagline, the Rogue.
Men.
That's about right for you.
Yeah.
That sounds good. And you have
busting
so much
myths,
information.
One at a time.
But it's a great source of tremendous amount of information and knowledge, and it's you know, it's just a wonderful resource. And we have been talking about Johnny's latest book, the 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth. And I have to mention, not only is it a fantastic book and elaborates in much more depth the information we've been talking about today, but you've also put a bonus CD in there.
Oh, yes.
Called 23 Ways to Improve Your Life. How exciting.
Thank you.
So
that's actually an excerpt that's meant to stimulate interest in the actual 3-CD set called 23 Ways to Improve Your Life, which is available on my website. But yes, there's a little excerpt from that in the CD that's included with the 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth.
That's great, because you're doing such a great job in helping people to understand how food really does become their medicine.
Thank you so much. And I'd like to, if I could, just do a little bit of a plug. We now have about four cookbooks in the pipeline, only one of which has come out, which is the healthiest 15-minute recipes on earth. In another month, we'll have the Live Longer cookbook, and coming soon in 2011 and 2012 are the most effective, is a book on crockpot recipes, which we're working on now, slow cooker recipes, and the most delicious comfort food, the healthiest comfort food recipes on earth, in which we took, you know, classic comfort foods and tried to do damage control, make them a little bit more healthy than they are in their normal incarnation.
And let me ask you, do you ever get time to sleep?
Do I ever get time to sleep? Good question.
Well, listen, you're doing such great work, and I really appreciate your time today. It's been a fantastic show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Please have me again, and thanks again.
Okay, we will. Bye for now. And you've been listening to What Women Must Know with Dr. Cheryl Selman and Dr. Johnny Badin, and I hope you'll come and join us again next week. We always have fantastic guests, profound information, and remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.